Welcome to today's study, Little Children, for March 25th, 2024 of the Common Era, and the time is 16:55 hours Eastern Daylight Time. Ward Green with you again. We've been studying the Protestant Bible. That's what I finally realized or remembered from a couple of days ago when I was reading about the Hebrew Bible. The content is identical to what is in the Tanakh, the original Jewish version of the Hebrew Bible, except that the divisions are different, where some books are combined in the Tanakh, which are not combined in the Protestant version. And the identical content, of course, between the Tanakh and the Masoretic text also, except that we might consider the Tanakh also very much as being represented more correctly by the Septuagint rather than the Masoretic text, the two being complementary in some cases. But the Greek Septuagint is still a translation of the Hebrew Bible, and the Protestant version is just a more modern book order. The order of the books is different from the Hebrew Bible or the Tanakh or whatever version, which was originally called the Tanakh, and it has later, whatever version it later has come to be in the Hebrew, in the Hebrew faith, it would be probably a different order of the books from what we have in the Protestant version, and the divisions are different. So there are 39 books in the Protestant version. There are 24 books in the Tanakh, or the Hebrew version, which, and the Tanakh is, of course, I explained recently how the 24 books can be made into 39 by simply dividing up the books of that version into the number of books that we have, 39 of the Protestant version, and the order of the Protestant version, as I said, is also different. So the books are in the order we have. For the Protestant version, that's what we're studying. And Second Chronicles is the 14th book of the Protestant version, which has many different languages, of course. The Protestant version is translated into many languages, including English, which we are studying. And Micah is the 33rd book of the Protestant Hebrew Bible. So there. We've been studying the Hebrew Bible in the Protestant order of the books and division of the books. And that was what I was trying to explain all this time as to what is it we're really studying. Although we sometimes, of course, also talk about the different translations, like the Greek Septuagint, with regard to the original manuscripts from which it's translated. So we have the Greek Septuagint, which is a translation of the Hebrew Bible into Greek, which was done in Egypt during the time of one of the Ptolemies, okay? About 200 years before the Common Era was when that version was made, the Greek Septuagint version, which meant there were 70 scholars who worked on it. That's why it was called the 70, or the Septuagint. Version of the 70 scholars, evidently, is what that meant. Now we have today's study, first of all, from the Crucible article, which is from chapter 9, paragraph 6. Yesterday we did paragraph 5, talking about the archaeological evidence for a city which was a Hebrew city, or a Judaic, how would we put that? A Judahite, also we could say, or a Jewish city that was very near to where David reportedly slew Goliath in the Bible, in the Bible account. So that this it just solidifies or validates the Bible account with archaeology by having a Hebrew or Jewish city right nearby to where David slew Goliath and very close in time by the radiocarbon dating to the time that David lived. Very perfect confirmation of the Bible account. Now, also chapter 9, paragraph 6, which is today's study. This is a very long study. I don't know if we'll be able to get it all done today, but because of the perfect match between the reign lengths and firstborn generation, perhaps we could do it all if we don't do some of the other readings, but there's a perfect match between the reign lengths and the firstborn generation average, which is the age at the eldest son's birth, from the time of King David down 17 generations to King Josiah, little ones. And because of that, we may confidently assert that the years from 1058 to 587, in our case we've changed it to 587 in more recent articles, BCE, these years are very accurately known, and King David ruled 1058 to 1017. That part has not changed. The final three kings of Israel from 608 BCE, that hasn't changed. That's the official year one of the first of the final three kings, until 587 BCE. That final date has changed by 1 year. Those final three kings were all vassals, vassal kings, meaning they were subject to the authority of a different nation. In the first case, it was Egypt, and then they were then vassals to Babylon. And the total reign length of those three kings was 22 years or 21 years and some months. The Bible says that King David knew King Hiram of Tyre, and that this king helped Solomon do building during 20 years. The connection between the kings of Tyre and the Temple of Solomon, and we talk about King Hiram of Tyre in the article called True, also where we explain more about how he could possibly have reigned long enough to have been alive during the time of David and Solomon both. But the connection between the kings of Tyre and the Temple of Solomon, mentioned in Josephus, in the book of his called Against Appian, the work of his called Against Appian in book 1, verse 18, where he gives a list of the kings of Tyre and how long they ruled. And that connection between the kings of Tyre and the Temple of Solomon is that Solomon's temple was said to be in the 12th year of King Hiram, and 143 years at least, very roughly, before, that is at least very roughly, because it's not necessarily going to be as accurate as we know the Bible to be, before Dido ran away from Pygmalion and founded Carthage. There were about 143 years, in other words, from the 12th year of Hiram until Dido ran away and founded Carthage. The account is a very low authority because the reigns of the king of Tyre, seen in the same text, demonstrate that the sum referred to is 125 years, obviously less than 143. Doesn't add up, in other words. But that's okay. There are other versions of the manuscript that do add up differently. But the one that I first used was this one that didn't add up. On the basis of a much higher reliability of the date 1058 for King David, we don't expect the number of Josephus to be accurate anyway, but on the basis, therefore, of a much higher reliability of the date 1058 for King David, which is our date in our chronology, we have a lot of confidence in that. And the building work of King Solomon from 1014 to 994 BCE, which is 20 years between those two dates. Now, when we say we're confident, it doesn't mean we tell everybody. If they're not appreciative, of course, we're only going to tell people on a one-to-one basis. We're going to communicate with people. We're only going to communicate certain sensitive data or details like these with people whom we deem worthy. But it appears that King Hiram can safely be said. That seems like another grammatical mistake here. Can safely be said. I think I'll have to change that one also when I edit this article. To be ruling Tyre in 1018, because we added 994. What did we add there to get that? That's 24 years. Where did I get the 1018? I'm trying to remember, or trying to add it up. 10. But the article that I wrote, there was a lot of detail that went into the calculations. I don't doubt the calculations. I just need to remember how I did it, why I did it this way, and that he was still ruling in 994 beyond the shadows of the doubts. Right? Okay, so there are many doubts, in other words, not just one, but if we take did we add 143? No, I don't think so. But the 34-year reign assigned to him by Josephus added to 994 yields 1028 BC. See, so I knew that. Okay, he was safely said to be ruling in 1018. That's what I said there, yeah. Safe, because that's the lowest we could put it and still have both kings being in the vicinity of either about to rule or just barely at the end of their rule, such as David was. And that's the earliest ruling date, 1028, if Hiram only ruled for 34 years, ending in 994. Unlike our trust for God's word, is far greater, but our reliance on the works of Josephus is, on the contrary, ill-advised. And Josephus has a lot of numbers which cannot be reconciled, so we cannot be as sure of 34. If 1028 were correct, though, we might note that Solomon's temple was founded in 1014, or 14 years later, which would not be year 12, it would be year 14, right, of King Hiram, compared to the 12th year of King Hiram, as mentioned by Josephus. Thus, an adjustment from 1028 to 1025 is warranted, since it also allows, or would be warranted if we believe the 34, since it also allows King Hiram to live beyond the end of Solomon's building by a few years, a seemingly reasonable situation. The reason we believe Hiram was alive after the time of the building is because, maybe we can find it if I look for it, in 1 Kings it is. I looked at it not too long ago. 1 Kings 11, probably, something like that. No, that's not it. That's just a second here. That's not it. It's probably 10. Oh, there it is. Verse 9. 1 Kings 9. After he finished building the house of Jehovah and the house of the king, right? Well, there were 20 years that he spent building. Maybe it's... Right. 1 Kings 8. Oh, no, it's not here. I don't see it yet. Hang on. This is probably here in... No, it's not there. It's at the beginning of one of the chapters. I know it is. Let me see. I have to find the name Hiram here. I believe it's in Kings rather than Chronicles, but right. No, it's not there. Okay, I just need to look up the name Hiram, or we have to look up and find Hiram. First Kings 10. He gave him some cities. Yeah, okay. So let's search up the search for Hiram with the word cities. That looks like it there. Yeah, here it is. Hiram went from Tyre. It's 1 Kings 9. At the end of the 20, it's in verse 10. It's not at the beginning of the chapter. It says, at the end of 20 years, I was wrong. It was not at the beginning, but it was in verse 10 of chapter 9 of 1 Kings, in which Solomon, at the end of the 20 years in which Solomon built the two houses, it says, at that time, and it says Hiram in verse 11 had assisted Solomon, and then it says at that time, Solomon gave to Hiram 20 cities, and verse 12, Hiram went out to look at the cities, so he was still alive after 20 years of Solomon building from 1014 to 994 in our chronology, which is when he built. That's when he built. In our chronology, that is the right time period when Solomon built for 20 years, was from 1014 to 994. Okay, it's the genealogy again. That's what we're using as our chronology. It's so reliable and so, it works in so many ways so perfectly well for so many different things that there's no reason to doubt it. In fact, that's what the Crucible is about. We're using the chronology by believing it and seeing what we can learn by believing the chronology. So, but there's more that can be said about Hiram, and it's all talked about in this paragraph, but we don't have time to talk about all of it. But it's talked about in this article as well as in later articles too. But the parts we talk, or the dating we talk about in this article, is not the best of all of what we talk about with regard to Hiram. Later on we get more accurate information, so there's no need to be too concerned with what this particular paragraph says about King Hiram of Tyre. It's really a bit of a problem at this point in our study, in this article, at this point in the research, with regard to the list of all the articles. This point in the genealogy was not yet ready to discuss exactly what happened with Hiram. So there are a lot of efforts being made in this paragraph to reconcile the dating of Hiram with the Bible. It's the problem is not the reconciling of Hiram with our chronology, but the reconciling of Hiram with the Bible is the problem. And clearly we don't have to worry about the Bible being accurate. That's not the point. I mean, we shouldn't be worried about it because it's so reliable. But our interpretation of the Bible could be wrong sometimes. And also, that is, if we are, you know, modifying what the Bible says through our interpretation, or the kings of Tyre could be wrong in terms of the list that Josephus gave. So we're not too worried about it. But look at how long this is, a very long article. But the amazing thing about our crucible, as we come down to the end of this paragraph, thanks to the purity of our own crucible, which is the chronology, the BG, by Jehovah's own grace, we have King Ahab marrying Jezebel, the daughter of Ethbaal, a Tyrian king, found on that list of Josephus, and he ruled beginning in 935 BCE in our chronology. That's how we date Ethbaal. And this is 15 years before Ahab ruled in 920 BCE. And he's Ahab's father-in-law, ruling 15 years before Ahab. That's pretty good for a father-in-law who could have had one of his younger daughter, or he could have been a different age from Ahab. You know, I mean, he could have been different in terms of, aligned differently in terms of the chronology, so that it's very conceivable that he could have had a daughter of a marriageable age for Ahab. It's very easy to see. It works perfectly well, proving that the kings of Tyre, as the article here continues, are generally well related to the kings of Israel in our chronology, in other words. Except, we comment here, we know King Ahab was very bad and his wife evil, so we don't want to relate the kings of Tyre to the kings of Israel too directly, because, or the kings of Judah, that is, because they were very evil, and King Ahab's wife was particularly evil. That's the end of our study in the Crucible for today. That was quite a long paragraph if you read it all, but it's not crucial to read too much into it, I would say, because of what we learn when we read the later articles. So I don't want to dwell on it overly much, but today's proverb, let's do that. At this point, I'd like to do that. Where is it now? I'm trying to think. Is it here? Here? There it is. So, where were we yesterday? We were at 12, I think. Yeah. We're in Proverbs 14, and we're reading today, little children, verse 13. As even in laughter, the heart may know pain, so grief is the end to which mirth will attain. It doesn't end well. In other words, when we're laughing and rejoicing, that's not heading in a good direction if we spend our time rejoicing and not working or not being concerned with anything. It's better to, you know, it's, and it says here in the first part of that, as even in laughter, of course, we may be in pain when we're laughing. Right? Even in laughter, the heart may know pain, but grief is the end to which mirth will attain, is a pretty sobering thought. We don't want to be laughing too much when we realize that there's work to do, and we have to do that work to prevent the grief that otherwise could arrive by our not doing the necessary work to prevent the bad things from coming. Now, 2 Chronicles chapter 16, in the 36th year of the reign of Asa, Baasha, king of Israel, came up against Judah and began to build Ramah, so as not to allow anyone to go out or come into Asa, the king of Judah. Asa now brought out silver and gold from the treasures of Jehovah's house and the king's house, and sent to Ben-Hadad, the king of Syria. Oh, we've used up 23 minutes already. We're not going to be able to read all of this at all. We're just about done the study. I had no idea I talked for so long. But he sent to the king of Syria, and this is where we see the king of Judah. Asa, forming an alliance with the king of Syria, just in a similar way to how the northern kingdom, Israel, had formed an alliance with the king of Assyria. The southern kingdom formed an alliance with the king of Syria, and he induced him by bribing him to come and to send military forces against the cities of Israel, verse 4. And as soon as Baasha heard of it, he quit building Ramah and stopped his work, verse 5. And so Asa then did some building work using the leftovers, or the stones that were left there by Baasha, and the timbers. And Asa built Geba and Mizpah, those cities. And Hanani the seer came to Asa the king of Judah at that time and said, "You leaned upon the king of Syria and did not lean upon Yahweh your God, and for that reason the military force of the king of Syria has escaped out of your hand." And then he said, did not the Ethiopians and the Libyans themselves happen to be a very great military force in multitude, in chariots and in horsemen? That was Zerah the Ethiopian. And by leaning upon Jehovah, did he not give them into your hand? Jehovah had provided or allowed Asa to conquer the great Ethiopian force of Zerah the Ethiopian, whom we identify as Osorkon I of Egypt. And all of that came about. Asa became offended at the seer, verse 10, and put him in the house of stocks. And he began to crush some others of the people at that same time. And look, the affairs of Asa the first and the last, there they are written in the book of the kings of Judah and of Israel. And Asa, in the 39th year of his reign, developed an ailment in his feet until he was very sick. And even in his sickness he searched not for Yahweh, but for the healers. Finally, Asa lay down with his forefathers and died in the 41st year of his reigning. So they buried him in his grand burial place that he had excavated for himself in the city of David. And they laid him in the bed that had been filled with balsam oil and the different sorts of ointment. And different sorts of ointment mixed in an ointment of special make. Further, they made an extraordinarily great funeral burning for him. And that's the end of 2 Chronicles 16, little children. Let's look at Micah before we run out of time. Micah chapter 2. Okay. Micah chapter 2. We have a few more minutes. Woe to those who are scheming what is harmful. It's 13 verses. And to those practicing what is bad upon their beds by the light of the morning, they proceeded to do it because it is in the power of their hand, and they have desired fields and have seized them, also houses and have taken them. And they have defrauded an able-bodied man and his household, a man and his hereditary possession. Therefore, this is what Yahweh has said. Here I am thinking up against this family a calamity from which you people will not remove your necks, so that you will not walk haughtily, because it is a time of calamity. In that day one will raise up concerning you people a proverbial saying, and will certainly lament a lamentation, even a lamentation. One will have to say, we have positively been despoiled. The very portion of my people he alters. How he removes it from me. To the unfaithful one he apportions out our own fields. Therefore you will come to have no one casting out the cord by lot in the congregation of Jehovah. Do not, you people, let words drop. They let words drop. They will not let words drop concerning these things. Humiliations will not move away. It is being said, O house of Jacob, has the spirit of Jehovah become discontented? Or are these his dealings? Do not my own words do good in the case of the one walking uprightly? And yesterday my own people proceeded to rise up as an outright enemy. From the front of a garment you men strip off the majestic ornament from the ones passing by confidently like those returning from war. The women of my people you drive out from the house in which a woman has exquisite delight. From off her children you take my splendor to time indefinite. Get up and go, because this is not a resting place. Because of the fact that she has become unclean, there is a wrecking, and the wrecking work is painful. If a man walking by wind and falsehood has told the lie, I shall let words drop to you concerning wine and concerning intoxicating liquor. He also will certainly become the one letting words drop for this people. I shall positively gather Jacob, all of you. I shall without fail collect the remaining ones of Israel together. In unity I shall set them like a flock in the pen, like a drove in the midst of its pasture. They will be noisy with men. The one making a breakthrough will certainly come up before them. They will actually break through, and they will pass through a gate. They will go out by it, and their king will pass through before them with Jehovah at the head of them. In the Insight book, under Last Days, it says, the prophecy of Micah. It's going to talk, but it talks about Micah chapter 4 in particular there. And also it says Micah chapter 2 is a reference down here. The King, Jesus Christ, it says, made a breakthrough in elevating true worship. So that's the comment that is in the Insight book there. In the reference for that chapter. So let's look at something more here. I want to just mention one more thing before we go. If you would like to know more about the Egyptian chronology and how it's been modified between the Crucible article and the later work, there's a lot of detail given in the Trojan War article. It's a phenomenally detailed explanation of how the Egyptian chronology differs between the Crucible article and also, well, it doesn't necessarily talk about the Crucible article, at least not. I'm pretty sure it does, but it doesn't talk about it specifically using it directly. It modifies it to make it more accurate, and it's a brilliant result that comes about in the Trojan War article. The alignment is so good with the lunar calendar and everything. It just comes up with these incredible synchronisms, you know, that just couldn't be any better than what they are. It's just miraculously aligned. I mean, it's so good. It's just so good. It's just indescribably good. I can't imagine it being better, although, considering that there are many difficulties with the Manethan, you know, Manetho's version here, for example. We only have another minute to talk about it, but Smendes, 26 years, and Susen, 41 years, is actually Susen, 46 years in Africanus compared to 41 in Eusebius. But the 46 years, when we give it 46 and every king his maximum number here, with Susen II having 35 instead of 14 on the last of those kings of the dynasty 21 here in Egypt, we end up with a total of 135 years for dynasty 21, which brings us from 1115, which is year 1 of Smendes in the genealogy, down to the year, which is 135 years later, which is 980, which is year 1 of Shishak or Cisonkosis of dynasty 22 here. But the amazing, remarkable thing is that because Simon or Sinachis, who's called Sinachis here, is also he also rules for 17 years, and his reign overlaps with Susen, we can explain how, as is talked about in the Trojan War article, we can explain how Shishak year 1 is actually 993 and not 980. So it's fascinating. It's worth reading and trying to understand it, I believe. And that's it for today's video. It's Monday, March 25th, 2024 of the Common Era. The time is 1729 hours Eastern Daylight Time. I'm Ward Green, and I love you very much. And in my behalf, this is Liv Dusty, and this is Cassie saying bye for now.